We'll call the House Tax Committee to order. The hour 10:15 have arrived, and we do have a quorum, so we are officially called to order. And I want to thank Representative Ward for being a little bit flexible here, because we have a member here that has several bills kind of all going at the same time. So thank you, Representative Ward, for that. So I will move House 5. Well, first of all, Representative Schultz moves the minutes of March 22nd, 2018. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Schultz. Item next, I will move House File 3918. And it would be there for possible inclusion. Mm-hmm. Okay. Two-year bill, Representative Swedzinski, we have it. The gentleman from Lyon, we have it before us.
Thank you, Chair David. Thank you, members. I appreciate the opportunity to come before Tax Committee once again. House File 3918 is a fairly straightforward bill. We've heard a lot about gun safety this session and throughout the country in this debate. This bill is pretty straightforward in the fact of just encouraging safe storage of firearms within the state. We all know that we're not going to be banning them due to the Second Amendment. So we just want to encourage the purchase and the use of gun safes and storage devices. We feel that this just is a common sense piece of legislation to move forward. And so that's the bill estimate, or the revenue estimate came back, I think at around the $300,000 range. We're happy with that estimate, and I'd appreciate your support.
Okay, thank you very much, the gentleman from Lyon. So with that, is there anyone else that would wish to testify on behalf of this bill? Anyone with concerns on this bill? Would the department like to comment on this bill?
Not at this time.
Okay, questions for members? Would you like to wrap it up, Representative Swedzinski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe there might be a couple letters of support potentially around. If not, they'll get emailed to you. So also have some folks with the National Turkey Federation here that are also in support of the bill. So I think whenever we have an opportunity to move things that are bipartisan in nature in support, that's good policy to the most part. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. With that, I'll renew my motion to House File 3918 to later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much, Representative. Okay, we will now go. Seem to have some chatter going on here. If we could kind of take our conversation to the alcove, if you would. Okay, so we have House File 4020 before us. That's a John Deere tractor that was really a good tractor. House File 4020, Representative Ward, I will move it. And thank you for being flexible here so we could get Representative Swedzinski on his way. With that, I'll move House File 4020, two-year bill, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I want to thank you for listening to this bill. I think you'll find that it is both sweet and healthy, and there are treats that will be coming around. I've not presented to this committee before. I haven't had a tax bill before. So I wanted to share some good news with you, both sweet and healthy. I have been involved in, I'm Representative Joanne Ward, and I also want to thank Representative Davids, Chair Davids, for working with me on this bill. We both have a real passion for healthy youth and strong communities. I've been involved with youth intervention programs for about 30 years and have seen the results, both for individuals and for communities. And I want to give the platform to the Executive Director of the Youth Intervention Programs Association, Paul Munier, so he can explain more about what this bill does.
Okay, thank you, Representative Ward. Before we take the testimony, is there anyone else in the audience which testifies on behalf of this bill with concerns? The department?
Yes.
Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Hi, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Munier. I'm the Executive Director of the Youth Intervention Programs Association.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you so much. As I sit here in front of you today, the one thing I'm hoping I can convey to you is that we need some reforms. We need things to work a little bit better in our communities. And I think we've come up with a novel idea of how we can reform how youth are handled in our communities so that they become productive, contributing members of our society as adults. The other thing I want to convey to you is youth intervention in general has strong bipartisan support. I've had the opportunity to talk to most legislators down here, and I have yet to find anybody who disagrees with me that there's some sort of disadvantage to helping young people become contributing members of society as adults. What this bill does essentially is it leverages partners. It's a creative way to fund youth intervention programs. And I believe that it will effectively bend the cost curve of government, at least flatten it or hopefully drive it down, because we know that government costs keep going up, and somehow we have to find some sort of programs that help slow the cost of government a little bit, and also provides a sustainable long-term solution to keep these programs alive. So it isn't always the state that's going to have to be funding these programs. We think we've got a creative, innovative idea here, and that's what I'd like to share with you. So just backing up a little bit, I think I need to identify the problem so people have a sense of what we're talking about here. In Minnesota, about 1 in 6, or about 300,000 youth, are growing up with risk factors in their life that is going to affect their developmental progress as they grow into adulthood. We're talking about the kids that are subject to sexual, physical, emotional, and verbal abuse. We're talking about the youth that are neglected, including not having adequate nutrition or emotional and social support. We're talking about the youth that are growing up in environments where the caregiver is addicted or is abusing drugs and alcohol. And we're talking about the kids who the parent or the caregiver has chronic mental health or physical health issues. So I can tell you, I've worked in this field for a long time. I've worked with these kids pretty much my entire life. And I can tell you, and you ask anybody in the field, there are more of these kids now than there were 10 years ago, and there's certainly more of them, than there was 20 years ago. We have a generational problem. These kids that are growing up with these environmental factors are not necessarily finding and hanging out with the valedictorians of their class. They're finding each other and hanging out with each other, and we have a generational problem that's multiplying and getting worse and worse. And we're paying the cost for that as we go down the road. Just a few examples of how it's impacting the state budgets. For example, in public safety alone, the Department of Corrections has spent nearly $500 million in the last 15 years in increased spending in corrections. We know in Health and Human Services the demand for services for adults keeps going up. And we also know with the new research going on that adverse childhood experiences, these things, growing up with these risk factors, have physical impacts on young people. We know that the rates of physical complaints are much higher with the kids that are growing up with these risk factors. And if they're not becoming productive members of society and able to sustain their own way, somebody's going to have to pick up their health costs. And we know the costs are astronomical to be able to fund these kids and their health care needs as they become adults and likely a lifelong consumer of our public services. And Representative Loon isn't here, but I've had a lot of conversations with her about the school districts and the pressure they have always to meet the needs of these kids that are growing up in environments. They're coming to school and they're not prepared to learn. It's hard to sit down in algebra class if your dad just beat up your mom the night before and then you say, sit down and learn algebra. This is a community problem that needs to be addressed. And I don't know about any of you, but maybe I'm old-fashioned. I think schools should be about educating and not solving social problems. We should focus education on learning. So literally, as a result of letting these kids fail, we are spending billions of dollars annually on adult intervention. We don't have a choice. When adults get addicted to drugs and alcohol, we have to treat them. If they're breaking the law, we have to incarcerate them. We don't have a choice when they demand adult intervention, and it's just bogging down the system. It's preventing us from spending money on infrastructure and things like that that benefit us all. So what we could be doing is instead of spending billions, is spend millions on youth intervention and avoid those costs. I hear a lot of talk about if we were a small business, if government was a small business, or how you would manage your own affairs. If you were running a small business and you know these huge expenses were out there in front of you, your first instinct would be, how do I mitigate the risk? How do I reduce those costs? And that's what I'm asking you to consider, to think about here. We're trying to mitigate these costs that we know are coming. To me, it seems like it's unsustainable. We can't continue to just have more and more adults that are demanding services. Somehow we have to stop the demand, slow down the supply of that. And here's what I want to tell you. I don't think the state of Minnesota is the solution to this. I don't think we can develop a department to build a relationship with the kid. This is a community-based problem that I think needs a community-based approach to solve. These kids essentially need two things. They need to be connected to their community, and they need an adult in their life that does two things that are fundamental to all parenting and to what we probably, all of us in this room today, I'm assuming most of us had. That someone who loves them unconditionally, and also someone who holds them accountable for when they mess up. And if they don't have that, they're going to go down the wrong path, and they're going to be these adults that are consuming our services and choking out state government. So, but the state does have a vested interest in this, because when communities fail to meet these needs and have these needs met at the local level, the state picks up those costs for all the things we've been talking about in human services and public safety. In education, K-12, we're picking up the cost for that, so somehow we got to mitigate those costs. So here's what this program does. It's the Youth Intervention Donation Tax Credits. First of all, it's not blanketed to go to everybody. It micro-targets the kids that are the most vulnerable, therefore returning the return on investment the biggest possible way that we can. It's just these kids that are growing up in these chaotic and environments that is having a detrimental impact on their development. It's not for everybody. It's micro-targeting those kids. And it leverages funding from other sources to help pay for it. So the state I talked about is the state can't possibly fund all this stuff. Somehow we have to be creative and find a solution that's going to be sustainable. And by having vested partners through tax credits means that the state is essentially spending 50% of the costs that go to funding these programs. So it's kind of a win-win. The state is investing 50% of the cost to these intervention programs, but they get 100, the state, you guys, get 100% of this, the short and long-term savings. That seems like a pretty good deal. If you're a business person, you'd probably take people up on that opportunity if you could return that kind of investment. But here's the biggest secret of all of this, is that this idea connects business people and people in the community with these youth intervention programs. Remember I was telling you, I don't think it's the state that's going to solve this. It's a local community that's got to solve this. By offering tax credits, these youth-serving organizations are going to go out in their community and start touting the idea that they provide real economic value, and they can offer tax credits if people donate to them. So you're bridging the gap, and you're finding that local, sustainable solution to make these things keep developing a life of their own so that we can start reducing the cost of government. This is the secret. These organizations have to get connected with donors and people in the community. And even if they don't make donations, these nonprofits might find business people to sit on their boards and help them improve their efficiency. They'll probably find volunteers that can help be mentors to these young people or paint their gym and their program. It can do all kinds of things. If these communities get connected with their intervention programs, that's the sustainable solution that's long-term that will work. So here's how the program works. It might seem complicated, at least it was for me, and I know Mr. Michael probably got frustrated when I had to keep asking him questions, but it really is pretty simple. So these youth intervention programs, they seek certification from some sort of entity. In this case, it's the Commissioner of Public Safety. They verify, they work with these kids that micro-target the kids that are most vulnerable. If they meet that criteria, then what they're eligible to do is they get certified as a youth intervention program. That allows them to go out and seek donations that offer tax credits. And when they get a donation that comes in, Chair David, say you wanted to make a donation. Your businesses wanted to donate to a community-based program. Then you would make that donation. That youth intervention program would provide you the receipt. You would take your receipt to the Commissioner of Public Safety on a website. It would be all automated. And then you will submit that because we know that's a verifiable donation that you made that's eligible. Then you'll get your receipt, and when you do your taxes the next year, you can do a 50% write-off on that. A 50% tax credit. The way the legislation is written up, it's for the Commissioner of Public Safety to oversee this. But it also allows them to contract with other nonprofit organizations that know youth intervention very well that might be able to oversee this program in a much more expedient way and also go out and broadcast to these businesses throughout the state and all the chambers and let them know if they donate in it to their local community youth intervention programs, they can be eligible for this tax credit. That is the sustainable part of this. We can figure out how to reduce the demand on state government, which I think is so important. So then finally, the last thing I'll have to say is that the bill sets an annual cap of $5 million, but also think about, because it's a 50% tax credit, if we max that out at $5 million per year, that means $10 million is going to go to youth intervention programs. That's a pretty significant chunk of services that will go to these kids that aren't getting services now, that hopefully will reduce the cost of these kids having to go to court, end up in systems, get hooked on drugs and alcohol, avoid teen pregnancy, all the things we want our young people to do. We want them to be productive members of society. Members of the committee, please know I'm trying to make a logical argument. To help you see, like, there is a way out of this. There is a way to kind of bend the cost curve. We don't have to be stuck just figuring out how to spend this money down the road. There's a better way to do it. But I will tell you on a very personal level, I've worked with these kids all my life. Most of these kids want a way out. Most of these kids have good morals and values. They lack the support to know how to develop. They don't have somebody who loves them unconditionally, and they don't have somebody who holds them accountable when they make mistakes. And when they don't have that, they find other kids that are in those same situations, and that's where they go down the wrong road. We can't save every kid, and I'm not here to tell you that I'm looking through this with rose-colored glasses. Some kids are a danger to society, and we have to deal with them that way. Some kids have gone too far, and they're damaged, and they're going to need intervention the rest of their lives as adults. But most of these kids are looking for help. And if somebody provides it to them, they're eagerly accept it because that's what they're looking for. Most of us want to fit into society, not be an outcast of society. So, Mr. Davids, thank you for allowing me to testify today and sharing my passion and what I believe is a logical, innovative, creative way to get us out of this rut that we're in and help Minnesota move forward and communities be stronger. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. You mentioned that you saw Mr. Michael frustrated. I've been here 26 years. I've never seen that. What was it like?
Well, Mr. Chair, I could tell you one point. He said to me on the phone, it's not that difficult.
Okay, Chairman Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Ward, for putting this forward. You know, I'm a co-author, and been an educator for all those years, looking at what our community has done with the, it used to be called Lakes Area Service, Youth Service Bureau. Now it's called the Lakes Area Center for Youth and Family. And they work very closely with the school district, the law enforcement. They have a board of directors, and there's law enforcement people on the board of directors, along with educators and people that live in the community, business people. And they have an executive director that called me just this past week, making sure that I was on this bill, because it means a lot to the community to be able to. They have fundraisers all year, and one fundraiser that they have is bow tie and blue jeans, where you have to wear a bow tie and wear blue jeans, and it's a dinner, and you have different family and also different businesses around the community that support this program. And what I do also, the executive director sends me, they give out awards to students that have come through the program. They give out awards to law enforcement, to educators, And what I do, they send me the information about these awards, and I have house resolutions made up, and I go to their meetings and do a presentation to these people, and it's especially to these kids that have gone through the program there. So it's they have professional staff that help these kids through their school years and also help them get into careers and jobs and so forth. It's an excellent program. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Detmer. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Ward, for bringing this for our consideration. It's an interesting proposal, and I appreciate what you're trying to address here. And to the testifier, I do have a couple questions. Maybe staff would know, or maybe you've done in your research. Do we know already what organizations would fit the definition outlined in the bill? Do we have a list of those available for the committee?
Mr. Munir.
Mr. Chair, Representative. The Youth Intervention Programs Association has 230 organizations that work with these kids in the state of Minnesota. They include police departments, school districts, mentoring programs, job training programs, anybody who works with these kids with these risk factors. Not all of them would qualify, but I would say I would make an educated guess that about half of them would. But not all youth-serving organizations are members of YIPA. It's hard to know the exact number, but they would have to meet that criteria that the majority of the work they do with is within these really high-risk kids.
Representative Wells?
Mr. Chair. So to follow up on that, would they have to be a member of YIPA then, or is that just one of the qualifying factors?
Mr. Minnick.
And then I'll follow up.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, they would not need to be a member of YIPA.
Representative Wills?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it would be helpful if we could have a more clear list of who this all would affect, if we can get that information for the committee based on the definition within the bill. And then I did have a question on the age range that was selected, 6 to 21 years old. And I don't know if you're aware that a few years ago when we increased the funding for the Homeless Youth Act, it was a bill that I authored, we also increased the age limit for homeless youth from age 21 to age 24 to align with what the federal level had changed to. And I'm wondering why you chose 21 as the cutoff and if it would be possible to maybe change that to 24 to just be consistent.
Mr. Munir.
Mr. Chair, Representative, great question. Yes, brain science tells us that the brain is fully developed around 24 or 25. The reason that we chose 21 is because there's some well-funded, well-noted, I should say, not funded, that's the wrong word, respected research that's out there about kids that are disconnected. It was commissioned by the federal government in 2012. And these kids that are disconnected between the ages of 16 and 21, that's the age group that if you don't get to them, the data shows that's when they're likely to be a lifelong consumer of public services. So we chose that because of that. But you are 100% correct that the brain science now tells us that age 24 or 25 is probably when the brain is going to be fully developed.
Representative Wills?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you would be maybe open to increasing that age to 21? Or from 21 to 24 on the legislation, if we move forward?
Mr. Munir, or Representative Ward, that's probably to you.
Yes, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we would be open to discussing anything, but most of the funding for these organizations are for the school age category, and it's 21. And I think that's a particular part of the criteria that we would need to consider. Police departments and social service agencies, the county services, generally cover that area for these kinds of services. Housing is critical to kids having stability and being able to access the services so that they can be healthy and grow well. And I wanted to also thank Representative Detmer for his comments. We share a county and services that go along with this, so I appreciate your help, too. Thanks.
Representative Wells?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more question. So looking at the revenue notes and anticipating that we'd probably see the $5 million used on the cap there, I doubt there's any way for us to know how much is already being donated, if accumulating all of the data from all of these different organizations. You mentioned that there's 230 organizations, but it seems if you're bringing a proposal like this forward, that you would anticipate that this would influence behavior and increase donations to be able to take advantage of this tax credit. Would you say that's correct?
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would, and I maybe Mr. Munera can tell us a little bit more about the underserved youth, the number of underserved youth, because we don't have the capacity, and I think that would be important in to answer that question.
Mr. Munera.
Mr. Chair, great questions. I don't have an exact number. Full disclosure, I don't know what that number would be, but I can tell you that I've worked in this field my whole life, and I work now closely with Matt Howard, the executive director of the program you're talking about. Every one of our programs tells us they have a waiting list of kids to serve. The numbers are, mind-blowing when you think about the kids that don't have any kind of connection to their community at all. These are the disconnected kids that are going to grow up and be there. So I don't know the number, but I can tell you the needs are absolutely great.
Representative Wills.
No, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for Representative Ward, but before that, I just want to commend Mr. Muir for your great work on youth intervention and the great work that you've done for the youth, and particularly your comment resonated with me regarding that schools should spend less time on social programs and more on academia and our studies. I think that was very poignant, and hopefully the message will resonate with our school districts as well. So good work to you, sir. And Representative Ward, thank you for your bill. Wonderful idea. Question for you regarding the $100,000 appropriation from the general fund to the Department of Public Safety to implement this. Of course, I'm just average Joe from Delano. It seems like a lot of money. Well, really, it's not a lot of money around this place, but it is a lot of money to those folks in Wright County and probably everyone in the room. It seems like a lot of money to implement this, the Department of Public Safety. So is that the number that they threw out that it would cost to implement this program? Or is it the Department of Public Safety?
Representative Ward.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, you're correct. I'm going to actually call a friend here. On that one, before I do, though, I want to add to your comment. Many of the referrals come from the schools because the kids are there and they're experiencing problems, and the services then are better provided by the youth service bureaus. The interventions are. Police also make referrals, and so we get support from some cities. Definitely from the school districts and from some county services, but communities and donations. But we also have so many unfunded programs and unfunded services, so that we don't have enough services available for kids. And I'm remembering 30,000. The estimate of kids who are not served at all. So when you look at the return on investment, and I've done some things in the past with youth intervention programs, and the estimate is somewhere between $7 and $12 per child to get these services, to keep them out of the services later. So it really does belong in the Department of Corrections to be dealing with this. And there are technology issues. You know, if it's all going to be handled through the Internet and things like that, somebody's got to pay for the management of that piece. And I think that the fiscal note described the amount. They told us what it would be. But I would ask Mr. Munera to expand on that, if you could, please.
Mr. Munera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to speak for the Commissioner of Public Safety. I do know some of those people are here today, some of the people within that department. Here's what I can tell you is, in working with Mr. Michael and having discussions that I did have with people within the Office of Justice Program, we did float around $100,000, and that was the number that they seemed to be comfortable with, but I can't speak for them as it is right now.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Ward, for bringing the bill forward, and Mr. Muir. I am very supportive of this idea. I'm familiar with youth intervention programs. I've been a big advocate of mentoring and that, and the power of what it can do to really help good kids who are maybe headed down the wrong path get back on the right one. But I guess just one question, and I'll just leave this with a thought for you to consider. And that is the reporting information from the programs who may seek to be part of this tax credit. And sometimes it's hard to quantify, but I think if there's any factors that could be reported by those organizations on their results, whether it's helping, you know, more of the kids who are in your program graduated than not, and some other things that are, again, more objective statistics, I think it really helps people see the value of these programs and how it actually does help, you know, save taxpayers money, help provide opportunities for youth who may end up being either part of the correctional system or somehow a ward of the state down the road, would also be a helpful addition to something like this, so people can actually see quantifiable results to these efforts. So just something to think about. And again, I commend you. I think it's a great initiative. Thank you so much.
Mr. Minier, to the Loon point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Loon, for your comments. And I'm very appreciative of the support you provided. I think what we've got here is a bare bones kind of a reporting process. I think that will evolve and develop into being able to track and be accountable for what some of those things are, the outcomes that we're having. That is the intent, and if the Commissioner of Public Safety was to contract this out, that would be the goal, is to start putting metrics to it and identifying and being able to tell those success stories. Not so much for me, but for our members to go back into their communities and say, here's what we're doing in our community. That's the most important thing. So we collect data for them to share, to go out and gain support within their community. Because, again, this is solved at the local level.
Chair Loon.
And just thank you. And again, I think those are good thoughts. And, again, I think those kind of statistics and information, I think, just further help attract people to be supportive of what I think is a really necessary thing. We have far too many kids just being lost, whether it's, you know, dropping out of school, falling in with the wrong crowd, getting into maybe crimes or other things, and these efforts can go a long ways to making sure that they're going to be happy, productive members of society.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't think anyone can question the good and the need for these kind of programs. I think for us the question is to wrestle with what is the best approach to investing in those, and my understanding is that the public safety budget includes an appropriation of around $6 million to these programs, and I'm wondering, Representative Ward, if you have a parallel bill that also would appropriate that amount of money to that program through our normal appropriation process.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Loeffler. We have tried. You know, targets are a limitation on any of the committees, and Mr. Muner and I have had conversations about moving forward with this and expanding the appropriations for these programs, and the limits have been set. So that's part of why we're doing a little more creativity, or trying to be a little more creative, but I would also ask Mr. Muner to comment.
Mr. Muner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. The YIP grant in public safety touches 5% of the 300,000 youth in Minnesota. 5%.
That are needing.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I think you can we can achieve the same goal, whether we do it through a one-on-one tax credit, as this bill proposes, or we put it through an appropriations process. If we do it through the appropriations process, you actually have a public safety committee overseeing it, making, you know, seeing how much we're growing in terms of meeting more than the need of 5% of the population, kind of reviewing it. We don't do as good a job in the tax committee in terms of reviewing what the real impact of our tax deductions are. Us as a committee, not yourself. I said a committee. But I do think we do need to think about this because we have seen so many bills last year and this year that are what I call most favored donation bills, and they make giving to this group better than giving to that group, and give them a tax first in line for your charitable donations, whether it was last year's bill to give money to private schools, whether it's, you know, we'll see a number of other ones. And today's headline in the Star Tribune, for those of you who don't see that, was about how the Greater Twin Cities United Way, their donations are down $10 million. And this is a continuing trend. They fund over 160 nonprofits across the entire metropolitan area. And I could imagine all 160 of those grouping into about 30 or 40 different groups and coming to us with this exact same bill, only with a different target population, whether it's people with disabilities or early childhood, 0 to 5, you know, all those sorts of things. And I really think as a committee we should really wrestle with whether we want to start getting into the most favored donation route, because I can tell you there are thousands of needs that we are inadequately meeting, and we're not doing it through our health and human services budget. We're not doing it through the public safety budget, and it will make being on this committee much more difficult, because we'll have to decide, are the youth in trouble more deserving than the youth who's struggling with a life-threatening cancer? Are they, you know, it's not easy picking and choosing amongst a deserving population. So I totally support the goals of these programs, and I think we need more of them and more investment in them. I'm just wrestling with whether the tax policy should be that we're going to create a long list of most favored donors and donation targets in this committee. So it's just a philosophy discussion I think we should think about.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Ward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your comments, Representative Loeffler, and understand the complexity of this issue and the many challenges. One of the comments that I would make on in favor of this is that we are talking about 300,000 kids in the state, and not just smaller groups of particular needs. We're talking about a very large number of kids who will be expanding their need for services as they grow older, unless we do some interventions. Additionally, one of the priorities of the youth intervention programs is that it's community-based. And we have, for years, had school districts, police departments, cities and counties supporting these programs as best they can in similar kinds of contributions as you've just described. But we're talking about businesses becoming aware of this these organizations in their community and partnering with them. So that if you think of a small business allowing shadowing or mentoring, that kind of, so there'd be so many more opportunities to involve more people at the community level than we could have otherwise. It's an incentive to bring people in, not just the money.
Representative Loeffler?
That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Chair Detmer.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just on a lighter note, we talked about the age 24 for brain development. You know, according to my wife of 45 years, mine is still developing.
There's hope.
That's all I had to say.
Okay, and I've got quite a list here, and that's all fine and everything. So we do, Mr. Rubis was, Dr. Rubis was able to get this room for 8:30 tonight. So so we're not going to be cutting off debate whatsoever. So we do have the room at 8:30 tonight. I won't be here, but maybe Mr. Cummings will be. Chair Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Ward, Mr. Muneer. I appreciated your comments, Mr. Muneer, especially when you talk about, you know, we can't afford the taxpayers to continue to shell out for these programs and the numerous other things that government does. By the way, Representative Ward, I might want to rent Mr. Muneer at some point. He's a very prepared and good testifier, so a great job. I was captured by your comments about, you know, saving state resources, and I think this is a good proposal in that it does that. It doubles what, you know, eventually the state is captivating in terms of taxpayer resources. But the problem that I see, not only this, I mean, Representative Anderson's got a bill, I think, next time we meet, Mr. Chair, very similar to this, dealing with housing. And, you know, again, another program area, as Representative Loeffler was pointing out, that we deal with. But what we don't do in government when we do these things is we don't decrease the spending elsewhere. Representative Ward and members, if we do something like this, it would be nice to maybe decrease the state commitment by the same amount somewhere else in our spending and still realize an increased contribution to the program through the design of it. So, anyway, that was just a comment. I don't know. I don't expect any comments back, Representative Ward. But I would really, if we do this, I would like to walk the walk and talk the talk on it. And let's decrease the taxpayer dependence on these programs, and let's still realize a growth in the program while accomplishing the other objective as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Drasikowski, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to either the testifier or to Representative Ward. Understanding that this bill is intended to generate more and additional contributions from individuals as well as investment in youth intervention as the primary cost, but also understanding that the $5 million cap, of that $5 million that is spent, will go to those that are already contributing and those that would continue to contribute to those funds without it. Do you have an idea of how much additional dollars this fund will generate? And the reason why I ask is if it's only $5 million additionally and we're spending $5 million, we really haven't improved the impact back from the state. So,
Mr. Muneer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, great question. I don't have a number on that. It's hard to know and hard to predict. People that already contribute, would they contribute anyways? That's a hard question to answer. However, I will tell you this. Society in general doesn't put much emphasis on helping kids that are, we deem as like bad kids. These are the kids that, remember, if they're disconnected, these are the kids that are acting out or withdrawing. Either they're the kids that are throwing chairs in the classroom or the kid that withdraws and starts smoking pot and maybe develops mental health issues. Society tends to want to focus on where like the biggest gratitude comes from, rescuing puppies. The Humane Society is phenomenal at getting donations. It's hard to go to your community and go, help me with these kids that are throwing chairs in the classroom, donate to me. That's almost an impossible ask to do. As somebody who's been involved in the nonprofit world, and as I'm a psychologist by trade, it's a hard ask to make. And most people don't want to do it. They want to go. And all these programs, Representative Loeffler, your comments were spot on. All these programs are worthy. What I'm talking about is where is the return on investment going to be the highest? And that's what we're trying to get at. And I do know that a lot of executive directors, like Matt Howard you were talking about, have a hard time going into their community and talking about these bad kids because there's not a lot of incentive. Businesses would rather donate to the programs that are going to give them good PR and goodwill. This is what we're trying to address, and these are the needs that somehow have to be gapped between the business community and these nonprofit organizations at the community level. That's the solution. So, Representative, I'm sorry that I don't have an exact number for you. I'm sure there will be a little duplication, but I will tell you, a lot of our members rely on grants and government funding. They don't rely heavily on individual donations because it's a hard ask to get. Humane Society gets a ton of individual donations because you're rescuing puppies.
Representative Petersburg. Representative Dabney. Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little challenged by, I think, potential application of this bill. I give money to one of these youth-serving organizations. I get a credit. I apply the credit against my tax. That I understand. What I'm unclear on is, for instance, looking at DPS grant recipients in this space, Lutheran Social Service. Mm-hmm. I worked for Lutheran Social Service for 5 years. I've got a great deal of respect for the work they do. That was my 5 years as an honorary Lutheran. they do a whole bunch of great stuff. I give them money, I get a certificate. There's no assurance that that money is going to their youth service programs. I've volunteered for the last 6 years fairly intensively for the YMCA. I've got nothing but respect and admiration for that organization. They do a lot of good stuff and they do it well. Not all of it is youth intervention.
Yeah.
But under this bill, my annual contribution to the YMCA suddenly becomes special, even though it may go to retile the bathroom floor somewhere, not into youth intervention. And I could go down the list, but you get the argument. Where's the assurance that this actually works towards your goals, setting Representative Loeffler's articulate points aside for now?
Yes.
Mr. Minner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we address this through anybody who gets solicits and receives $150,000 annually in donations would be required to submit some sort of report, and that process is yet to be determined, to justify how those dollars were used and where they went. We set that at $150,000, I think, and Mr. Michaels might be able to address this, but I think we're trying not to make this too laborious for somebody who gets, $50,000 in donations. The reason being is you go to talk to any nonprofit organization, and the executive director will tell you they spend way too much time with administrative work trying to account for all this kind of stuff. So we recognize the need, and I think we set a cap when it becomes significant enough that they would have to justify it. That may not appease committee members, but that's where it's at right now.
Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think part of the challenge for me is if I give money to the Bridge for Youth, mm-hmm. I know that's going to runaway youth. They do great services. If I give it to Pillsbury United Communities, maybe it ends up in their charter schools, maybe it ends up in their theater program, all of these are great organizations who do all sorts of good things, but money is fungible, and I'm not sure that it hits the target that you're trying to hit. That's my hesitation, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Chair Dabney. Any other questions for members? We're not meeting at 8:30 tonight. I just made that up. Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much, sir. We'll now go to the department for some comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And as Mr. Cummings is coming up tomorrow, a Quam bill, McDonald, Wills, Anderson, not necessarily in that order. I'm going to try to accommodate members who have other bills and other committees as we're on the second deadline week here. Please state your name. Who represent for the record, please, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and I will be brief.
Welcome, committee. You don't need to be brief.
The bill provides a non-refundable credit for donations to youth intervention organizations, which is generally 50% of the donation. The maximum credit is $5 million. Each applicant organization The maximum amount of tax credits per applicant is $10,000 for married and $5,000 for individuals. The heart of the proposal is to provide more resources to youth intervention organizations, which I think we can all agree is a worthy cause. There are many worthy causes in Minnesota, Mr. Chair. Since the state would subsidize at such a high rate, 50%, this seems like this could be money directly appropriated and prioritized among other spending programs through matching grant programs or through the direct appropriation process. Grant programs also provide designs that can be modeled to best achieve public outcomes in this area and to provide oversight. This proposal would also provide tax benefits for contributions to youth intervention programs that would not be available to other worthy nonprofits. We should then have a discussion of which worthy causes should receive the normal subtraction deduction under law and which should receive the higher 50% credit threshold, as was discussed earlier. We look forward to working with the committee and staff to discuss other drafting ideas that could clarify the bill. And if this bill moves through the process, the Department of Revenue looks forward to working with you, Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, and staff. We thank you for the opportunity to come before you today.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. So you are a resource on this bill.
Absolutely.
Okay. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the author of the bill would like for me to make an oral amendment, if that's allowed.
Certainly. Please state your amendment.
The line 5.29 currently appropriates $100,000. This is a one-time appropriation. I believe the author would like to have that be an annual appropriation of $100,000 to administer the program and to monitor it, to hand out the certificates for the tax credit, and to audit.
To the Schultz amendment, the Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Schultz. We realized that this was missing when we were looking at the fiscal note last night. So we would ask the committee to consider this as an option.
Okay. So questions from members? Representative Schultz, again, if you please, on page 5, line 5.29.
So, Mr. Chair, instead of a one-time appropriation in 2019, it would be an annual appropriation of $100,000 to administer the program?
Okay, Mr. Michael, what kind of wording would we use here?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that this sort of isn't this what we normally do, but I think in order to put this into the base budget so that the legislature in 2019 would then treat this just like any other cost of public safety, probably what you should do is on line 5.31, delete everything after credit, and then on line 5.32, delete budget. And that would have the effect of, in the second year of the biennium, appropriating this money to the Department of Public Safety, and then when the next biennial budget comes out, this $100,000 would be in DPS's base budget and would be subject to the normal budgetary process that the public safety finance folks go through.
Okay, we've heard the amount of questions from members. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you remind me again, was the motion then to send this to public safety, or where does this go?
This would be late. Chair Anderson, this would be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. So do you believe that this would require them to go to state government finance?
Yes. No, Mr. Chair. This would certainly need to go back to public safety since you're making it now one kind of appropriation, but in the appropriation that impacts their base budget.
Okay. Thoughts, Representative Ward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the clarification, Mr. Michaels. I appreciate that. We are open to what the committee thinks best, and perhaps Mr. Michaels could advise us on the need for that.
Well, I think Chair Anderson is correct. Vice Chair McDonald?
Mr. Chair, well, not necessarily to Representative Anderson's question or concern, but I think she is correct. I would second that nomination. But a question for Representative Ward. Do you think it might be more prudent to see first how much this really costs the Department of Public Safety? Perhaps it's half of that, just to annually appropriate that money. What is your opinion on that?
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. I was actually thinking very much the same thing, that as we get into this, we'll learn more about what it's really going to cost, and then we could make adjustments from there. So how we do that, I'm really open to suggestions.
Vice Chairman Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ward, then I would suggest my own personal humble opinion, since you have a good bill in front of you, that to not approve the oral amendment, for this will send it back to public safety and probably maybe another stop. It's a good piece of legislation right now, and I would leave well enough alone, in my personal opinion, if it was my bill. And that would be my advice.
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Representative Ward, I would concur with Representative McDonald. I would actually remove Section 3 of the bill and do a separate bill just on that piece alone, because otherwise you will have issues with public safety regardless, because it's still a one-time appropriation that comes out of the budget number.
So would it work to just remove Section 3 for now, so the bill's still alive, and rather than sending it off someplace into oblivion? Mm-hmm. Representative Ward?
Thank you, Chair Daniels. So what I just want a clarification for my own mind. If we take out Section 3, what do we do about ongoing expenses for the administration of this?
It sounds to me, well, Mr. Michael, maybe you could describe the process here. She'd have to put a separate bill in to do what Section 3 does.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Minear?
Mr. Michaels, this is complicated. Does that mean then that bill would have to go through public safety?
That's correct, because that's we're kind of dabbling in their area, and we get very touchy about that as chairs. Sometimes cranky. Chair Markworth.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Ward, I would suggest you separate that out of this bill and take those separately.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and all of you for your advice on this. We will make that change. And so delete Section 3, and then we'll proceed with that funding separately.
We have a motion on the floor at this point. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You may just want to leave it as is, another option, mm-hmm. and then next year introduce an appropriation bill to extend it. That's my advice.
Okay.
Discussion. Actually, Chair Drazkowski.
Well, once again, Mr. Chair, I think the Public Safety Committee would entertain, even putting this in a permanent law if they could realize a reduction in their budget elsewhere, probably a greater amount in order to accommodate this bill.
And I didn't catch that earlier. Actually, that would need a little public safety, and so it might be okay. Did you withdraw your motion?
Yes.
Okay, you withdrew your motion. So I'll make the motion to delete lines 5.28 to 5.32, so that it's still basically what that the effect of that is. The bill then, as amended, would be still in the purview of the Tax Committee. A discussion? Chair Anderson? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended. Representative Ward, would you like to wrap it up, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. Thank you very much for this vibrant discussion. I really appreciate all of the input that you have provided. You just make it better and help us move this along. So thank you very much. I would entertain any questions or conversation afterward if someone would like to talk with either one of us. We'd appreciate it. Thank you very much for your work on this and helping us make it work.
And thank you, Representative Ward, for your efforts here, and to the testifier, we really appreciate that. So with that, I'll move that House File 4020 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much to everyone involved in this bill. Item next and item last, I will move House File 3976. Representative May Quaid, if you would join us, and I believe I've got two testifiers listed, a Krista DeBoer and a Mark Schmidt. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on behalf of the bill with concerns thereof and the department? Okay, thank you, Mr. Cummings.
And again, I've got to figure something else out there, because when you say you're not going to testify, I'm thanking you, and that's not my intent. Oh, we do appreciate it, though. So, with that being said, welcome to the committee, Representative McQuaid. There are no amendments that I see at this point.
Mr. Chair.
So please, yes, Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to offer an oral amendment just to fix a typo.
Okay.
On line 1.10, after the word food, strike through though and add the word through.
Can you please restate that, please?
Yeah. It is line 1.10, okay. After the word food, strike through though and add in the word through.
Members, do you see what we're doing here? So I will move on line 1.10 after the word food, delete though, and insert through. Questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. That was robust. Division?
Still robust.
Okay, so with that, please present your bill, Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. You'll have some food coming around. The chair and Representative Carlson will be served first per standard in this committee. I'm bringing this bill for you today. As many of you know, I started with Representative Hamilton, the Childhood Hunger Caucus. And the caucus was really formed to get legislators in a room together and listen to advocates and stakeholders to find out where can we move legislation and fix things in state policy to make sure that we are addressing hunger, particularly with youth. This bill is that first issue area that we identified, so I'll give you a little bit of background. There is a federal program called CACFP, the Child and Adult Care Food Program. Folks who enroll in CACFP traditionally serve youth, adults with disabilities, adult day programs, and then seniors as well. 5 years ago, Youth Prize was approached by Hunger Free Minnesota and asked to step into this role of helping with the administrative burden of CACFP. Here in Minnesota, our applications are 30 pages. In places like Colorado, it's 10 pages. So off-site, smaller child care providers or adult day programs, we're really feeling the burden. Youth Prize, an organization here with me today, stepped in to handle that administrative burden. They make the application, and then they contract with the food vendors to supply the food on site for folks. What has happened is they contract with for-profit food vendors, and because the for-profit food vendors, like catering companies, the taxes that Youth Prize has to pay comes out of their budget. So even though they're 100% reimbursed to the federal government, they're still paying state taxes as if they're catering these meals when they're not. So this is that first area we've identified to fix. And I just want to, Representative Hamilton is much better with words than I am. And when we started this caucus, he said, children shouldn't have to worry about where their next meal is going to come from. Let the adults find solutions for that so kids can focus on being kids. This is one of those solutions, and I'm really excited to bring it before you. I'll pass it over to my testifier, Krista.
Thank you very much. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning. My name is Krista DeBoer, and I serve as the Nutrition Program Director for Youth Prize.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and members. I'm very pleased to be here today in support of HF 3976. I want to thank Representative May Quaid, Representatives David and Representative Hamilton for their leadership in sponsoring legislation to provide a tax exemption for organizations purchasing prepared food as part of two federal food programs. HF 3976 will help hunger relief organizations stretch dollars further to reach more low-income youth and children who lack access to healthy meals and snacks during non-school hours. Youth Prize is a youth-centered philanthropic organization founded by McKnight Foundation in 2010. We invest in the future of Minnesota by investing in our youth. Since our inception, we have granted over $25 million and provided technical support and training to over 100 organizations across Minnesota. Youth Prize supports programs and initiatives in the Twin Cities Metro, as well as communities in greater Minnesota, such as Northfield, Faribault, Red Wing, Rochester, Mankato, Moorhead, Sauk Rapids, St. Cloud, Duluth, and Wilmer. In 2015, we launched the nutrition program to increase access to millions of dollars of federal resources that were not being utilized that could support healthy meals and snacks. Two federal food programs provide reimbursement for meals and snacks served at after-school and community-based sites during non-school hours. Communities all across the state are eligible for these programs. We increase access to healthy meals and snacks for programs held at libraries, recreation and community centers, youth organizations, churches, and charter schools, all by handling their compliance, their food vending, and their training needs. We also provide upfront payment for the cost of food purchased and delivered to sites and eligible communities. Our staff work closely with local vendors that prepare and deliver meals and snacks, ensuring the compliance with the USDA regulations. Youth Prize also raises additional funds well beyond the federal reimbursement to adequately cover the costs of administering these programs. In addition, our nutrition program reduces food expenses for community partners by working with youth or that are working with youth in eligible areas. Our roles allow partners to focus on what they do best, nurturing children and youth through quality programming. In our first year of operation, we served 10 sites over 67,000 meals, largely in St. Paul and Minneapolis. In our second year, we've doubled our impact in St. Paul, Minneapolis by serving 20 sites over 129,000 meals. Our third year and most recent year, we've expanded by serving Twin Cities' first ring suburbs and obtained new sites inside of Anoka, Washington, and Dakota counties by serving 40 sites over 225,000 meals. Every year, we expand our geographic reach towards serving all eligible areas in Minnesota. This bill will help us continue our growth and anticipated expansion in the coming years by eliminating taxes as a barrier. We've paid over $53,000 in vended meal taxes since July 2016 for this program. These are funds that could have been used to provide over 17,000 lunches or suppers, 70,000 snacks, or 30,000 breakfasts. With our continued growth and the anticipated financial implication will continue to restrict our expansion and service area, thus leaving more children without meals in eligible service areas.
Thank you very much. To the next testifier, please.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Marcus Schmidt. I'm the Director of Advocacy for Second Harvest Heartland, one of the largest food banks in the United States and the hub of Minnesota's emergency food system. Thanks for the opportunity to speak here this morning on this legislation. Second Harvest Heartland takes our mission to end hunger through community partnerships very seriously. We could not do this work effectively without our partner organizations, and that's why I'm here today. We value our partnership with Youth Prize because of their commitment to Minnesota's young people and for the work they're doing every day to connect hungry kids with healthy meals. Mm-hmm. 1 in 6 Minnesota children does not have enough food to eat. Let me repeat that. 1 in 6 kids in the state right now is going hungry. We know that hunger is costing our state nearly $1 billion a year in lost workplace productivity, poor classroom performance, and health care costs. But for kids, those effects run much deeper. Hungry children are much more likely to perform poorly at school and suffer from anxiety and depression. They're at much greater risk to take their own lives. These are not just our future workers in Minnesota. These are the classmates and friends of our own kids. For some of you, they are the friends of your grandkids. We can all do something about this right now, and that's why Second Harvest Heartland is hopeful that one of the key takeaways from this legislative session is the beginning of the end of child hunger in Minnesota. Child hunger is Minnesota's largest, most solvable problem, and this legislation will help us move the needle by encouraging more prepared meals through a critical federal nutrition program. Last year, nearly 90,000 Minnesota kids were reached through the Child and Adult Care Food Program, or CACFP. On behalf of Second Harvest Heartland, I'm here to express our unwavering support of this legislation because it will generate more meals for hungry kids in Minnesota. Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for your support of this legislation. Representative May Quill, I want to thank you for your leadership on this issue, as well as Representative Hamilton, who couldn't be here today. And I just want to take this opportunity to thank the Youth Prize team, Krista, and others for their incredible work and their partnership with our organization. Thank you for your time today, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thanks for your public service to the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Questions for Mr. Schmidt, Ms. DeBoer, or the author, Chair Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative McQuaid, for bringing this forward. I have a question for Ms. Dalton. In your brief here, you've got prepared food is currently excluded from the general sales tax exemption for charitable nonprofits. I mean, I'm kind of wondering why this group wouldn't be exempt already, or is it because they contract for the food? Could you make that distinction?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, that's correct. If they were actually buying the food and preparing it themselves and then delivering it to the sites through their own kitchen, okay, it would be exempt. The problem is they aren't running a kitchen.
Right.
So they are contracting with caterers or other commercial kitchens to actually provide their food. And prepared food, by definition, is excluded from our exemption for nonprofits. Mainly it's because one of the issues is we don't want nonprofits buying meals for their boards and sure. fundraisers or other things.
Very good. And thank you, Mr. Chair. And my reading was correct. Food for the board members and so forth would not be exempt under this. So thank you. Thank you, Ms. Dalton. Thank you, Representative McQuaid. I mean, it sounds like a normal extension of the intent of the law here. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Questions for the testifiers? Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly a worthy cause. Mr. Schmidt, I've seen the billboard, 1 in 6, and I haven't met a kid that's hungry yet. And so I'm wondering, where are these kids and how do you measure that?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative. Second Harvest Heartland partners with the Boston Consulting Group. So they're a consulting firm, international consulting firm, similar to McKinsey. They sit on our board. And approximately every other year, they conduct a pro bono study for us. And in 2016, they conducted a study focusing on child hunger in Minnesota. And the results are included in the report that's listed on our website. And I'm happy to follow up with the committee with a copy of that report. But that is the source of the 1 in 6 children in Minnesota that's food insecure.
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. I'd enjoy reading that. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for members? Okay, with that, Representative McQuaid, would you like to wrap it up?
Absolutely. Members, thank you again for hearing this bill today. Chair David, thank you so much for your support of this bill, and I want to thank Representative Hamilton as well. I had a high school student come to my weekly coffee and conversations 3 weeks ago, and he told me that when he was really young, he was hungry at school, but he didn't know he was hungry. He was just tired. And as he's gotten older, he started to see how hunger affected his performance when he was in school. One of the things kids don't always know is how to name what they're feeling or name what they're going through, because they're still kids. They're still learning. But we know what that is. We know what their hunger looks like. We know how hunger affects them. And I'm really excited that this is one of the steps that we can take to start ending childhood hunger here in Minnesota. So with that, I thank you.
Thank you, Representative McQuaid, and thank you to your testifiers, Ms. DeBoer and Mr. Schmidt. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 3976 as amended be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much. And with that, there's nothing else for the good of the order. Thank you for the snacks and treats, by the way, and to Representative Ward also. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.
We got 11:30.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.